You're listening to Liberty Sound with Ryan Hill. Welcome to Liberty Sound, everyone. I am Ryan Hill, the host of this show and its creator. Coming up today, you will hear about my reaction to The Chosen Season 3 opener, which I just saw over the weekend. There was also Gamer Christmas, and we've heard this week some rumors about nuclear fusion that I wanted to get into, and then also some political stories that we're following here as we approach Christmas and get into the holiday spirit. Hey, you can find this show on Podbean today and next week, but soon, very soon, Rumble and YouTube are going to be the homes of this show. So it's still going to be kind of this podcast format and then maybe a hybrid between live streams and pre-recorded. I'm also moving to a video type production. So I'll elaborate on a little bit more on that in just a second. But in case you're listening on Spotify, Apple, TuneIn, and Podbean and not on YouTube or Rumble, you may want to go follow the show on one of those two channels so that you continue to get episodes in the future. However, it may still end up being on all of those. I don't know how it's going to work once I close out the subscription that I've got. It could still be there. It may just be recent episodes and not all of them. I don't know. Maybe I can manually post it still. So more on that coming up in January. And we'll review this again in a minute. For the rest of the info here, you can get the show notes in the description on wherever you're watching or listening now. And you can follow me on Truth Social, on Gab and Twitter as FOA Ryan. That's FOA Ryan. And I am on Telegram with the channel FOA Universe. I'm also locked out of Twitter still, or not locked out, but I can't get signed in unless or until they turn back on the text message verification system. Cause like you have to have the code to sign in, and I can't get the code for some reason. So it's disappointing. I could be tweeting about so much. Speaking of Twitter, Elon Musk said, "Politics is war and truth is the first casualty." I don't know when he said that, but it's a quote that was posted on Twitter from at Musk University, to which Musk replied, "Wait, is that true?" And, you know, that's actually, you know, kind of funny, right? I didn't set it up that well, but politics is war. Truth is the first casualty. I'm thinking more about the seriousness of it. Here's my take on it. Politics is simply war, with the generals and the commanders agreeing not to use guns for the time being. And Ezio Auditore would say, nothing is true, everything is permitted. And then again, on the subject of truth, David in the Bible would say, all men are liars. And I think that a lot of this stuff lines up with the message of truth, which is a central theme of this show, is talking about the truth. In the New Testament, it says that there is nothing unclean of itself, but to him that esteems something to be unclean, to him it's unclean. And by implication, vice versa, if you think something is clean, well, for you it is. But if you can't receive something with thanksgiving to God, then it's not clean to you. And so really there is kind of, you know, we don't like to talk about gray areas in the moral sense, a lot of people on the conservative side, but truth does sometimes have perspective to it. And your truth versus someone else's truth, looking at the same thing, could be very different. Scott Adams says people see two movies on one screen when he talks about persuasion. All right, so enough of those esoteric opening comments. So just a quick reminder again about Christmas coming up. I'm not going to do a show the week of Christmas, so we won't be talking then, but we'll talk this week and next week and also starting up again in January. But the schedule is kind of TBD in January of 2023 because I'm changing the format a little bit. I'll be turning on the camera in some format. I have already done that a little bit just on a testing kind of basis, just like, can I do a video and can I look into a camera and look normal for an hour or 30 minutes or whatever. So I hope to do some more of those in the future and then keep adding elements as we go. But it's going to be video first, and then podcast second, kind of from that point on. I still plan to do live streams probably weekly for the time being. And like starting in January, I mean, I'll continue to do weekly live streams. But I might change that to where maybe I'll do one live stream a month so I can produce more videos that will be topical or more focused videos. So I haven't worked it all out yet, but I do know that I'll just be doing video in January. And that's kind of the idea. So I'm excited. And I've also got some other things going, like on the personal side, to make sure that I'm able to keep doing this. Otherwise, you know, if you can't pay the bills, then you can't keep doing the show. It's kind of like, you know, you got to work hard to play hard. So we'll be doing a lot of that. It looks like 2023 is going to be a as busy as a year as the rest of my years have been in my adult life. So without any further hesitation, let's go into the headlines that I want to cover this week, which will be really most of the show today, because I'm kind of still winding things down for Christmas. We'll talk about some more Christmas here in a second. So Kristen Sinema over in Arizona, I guess you've heard by now, everyone's heard that she is switching parties, or she's switching out of being in a party and is now going to be an independent in Arizona. And as far as we know, she's still going to caucus with the Democrats. She'll still vote mostly Democrat. But I've noted Sinema since she was first appointed, and then she won an election, I think, shortly after that, a special election or something. She's been a senator for a few years now. If you recall, she was the one lone Democrat who stood up and gave President Trump, during his State of the Union address, a standing ovation. And she was kind of scoffed at by the left for it. But and she was even scoffed at by the right too, saying it was disingenuous. She's just trying to get the points. And of course she was just trying to get political points. It's politics. That's how it works. You do that from time to time. And so does the right. But I kind of thought that she was making a point that she is going to be a little bit different. Remember, Arizona is the state where John McCain, right? He was the Maverick senator. And that seems to be an ethic that comes out of Arizona, at least in politics. So she's switching to independent. And who was it that's been saying for a few weeks and then talked about last week that we're going to have party switches going on? Well, that was probably not just me, but I've been talking about it for about a month now. And here we have, right after that, same as last week's show, we had a state level senator in Tennessee. Now a national level, federal level senator has changed parties, or at least changed out of a party. So will there be more to come? I don't know. I don't think Joe Manchin's going to change parties. It just doesn't seem, because it would change the balance of the Senate. If the Senate was already Republican, I think he would be Republican the very next day. But since that hasn't happened, then I don't know if he's going to be the one to switch it over. But these independent voices will still be among the most relevant when it comes to negotiations in the days ahead of us going into the new session. Okay, so out of politics for a second, let's talk about Gamer Christmas. I've got a couple of sound bites to play here, and I didn't notate them very well, so I hope we navigate through this. A little bit out of order. Otherwise, we're talking about nuclear energy right off the bat, and that's too deep of a topic. So let's do Gamer Christmas. Last week, I don't remember what day, was it Friday night? It might have been Friday night. The Game of the Year Awards, which were broadcast from Japan, I presume. I think it was in Japan. I just bumped my microphone too. Let me start that over. So in Japan, somewhere in Japan, the Game of the Year Awards went on, and they give out all the different awards, like it's the Academies or the Oscars, but for game production teams, and based on what's the most innovative, what does the most, the best story, what in different aspects of games that are released from year to year. There was a lot of speculation that Ragnarok, God of War Ragnarok, was going to win Game of the Year. It just came out. It's had a lot of hype behind it. And I kind of thought it might win because of that. But the award ultimately went to Elden Ring, which is in my view, it's a Lord of the Rings kind of game. From what I learned in the last couple of days, or hours even in some cases, it's a Souls game, which puts it in the same family as Bloodborne and a few others. I think the other one is just called Souls, or All Souls, something like that. And Elden Ring is this fantasy RPG, these new RPG style action adventure games, and it involves a lot of sword fighting, a lot of skill level upping, and a lot of time from the looks of it. I haven't played it, I don't have a next-gen system yet, and I'm holding off playing any true next-gen games until I get one, because I just like to have the experience, and I'm way behind on games anyways. So I don't know why I'm telling you so much about this particular game, other than it deserved the award. I think it was probably expected to win throughout most of the year until God of War came out. And once it did, then it was up in the air. Horizon, which we also talked about when I first started this show, has an interesting mythology to it, or a mythos. All of these games really do, these big epic ones. They borrow from Greek mythology. They borrow from world history and events and stitch it together in interesting ways if you read between the lines on some of them. Not all of them, but these ones in particular did. So this award goes out, and I've played it up pretty well, I think. But right after they give out the award, there is some kid standing up on the stage. There's not that many people up there, and he's wearing dark clothes. Most of the men, I think it's all men on the stage at the moment. Most, and let's be honest, it's a gamer award. There's not going to be that many women, but they probably have a few. So just the harsh realities of the subject matter at hand. But there's this kid standing behind the dev team that gives their thanks, and they have like a translator up there because it's in English, but most of them don't necessarily speak English. They're probably Japanese developers. And then this kid shows up after the final award is given out. I'm going to play for you what he does, and then we're going to talk about just this hilarious event. It is, there's a commentary that's playing over it, but you can hear the main event going on is the kid. Listen to this.
We supported these titles, and we create the games we want to create and do our best because of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I think if God of War Ragnarok came out just a few months earlier, it would have a bigger chance.
You know, real quick, I want to thank everybody and say that I think I want to nominate this award to my Reformed Orthodox Rabbi, Bill Clinton. Thank you, everybody.
Who was that guy?
All right.
Who was that guy?
So that's some streamer that is... I'm maxing out my microphone over here. That's some streamer. I gotta turn the other way when I say that. That is like reacting in real time, as I happen to catch this in real time myself, watching somebody else's stream. And who is this kid comes out? Did you hear what he said? I've got a cleaner excerpt of him saying that so you can get the full impact. But he thanks somebody that is very fresh in American memories.
You know, real quick, I want to thank everybody and say that I think I want to nominate this award to my Reformed Orthodox Rabbi, Bill Clinton. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Well, the eventful evening. Congratulations.
He wanted to thank his Reformed Orthodox Rabbi, Bill Clinton. What in the world is... And so this was evidently just some big troll, and the kid is, from what we've learned in the days that followed, he is some kind of, I mean, he probably thinks he's pro level, but he's some kind of troll that does this habitually. Let's put it that way. He's a habitual troll. And he has gone to other events before. I want to say that I heard he was the same kid that was doing the Free Hong Kong kind of mock protests at different events, and he got on a microphone at some different places, but it looked like a much younger kid with a much higher pitched voice. Although you heard the accent in this was a little bit peculiar. So I found the interview that he went on the next day, or maybe it was the day, maybe it was 2 days later, because he was apparently arrested. And then according to where I found this video source behind this audio, you're going to hear, he was released because it's not actually, he didn't really do anything illegal. It was just kind of this big security event. And also the reaction to the video that I got this from is wondering why, how did the security let this guy stand on stage the whole time they're giving out this award speech and nobody knows who he is. And as soon as he walked up to speak, you can see the other guys who were supposed to be there and holding the trophy are just wondering what in the world is going on. So all kinds of weird fan things happening around this. But listened to him on the interview the next day, and I don't want to give him too much attention, but I can't believe this happened. So we've got to play it. Here we go.
You know, in the beginning, I was over, I think, to the what was my right side, maybe my left, I'm not sure. But, you know, I kind of maneuvered myself a little bit into the middle because I was anticipating my speech. You know, I think one of the main things with him is that, you know, he looked a little bit angry, a little bit frustrated. He probably didn't know the full extent of what was happening. You know, he probably was
Yeah, no kidding.
A little bit confused and angry, but I feel he doesn't speak English from what I've seen because he has a translator. Mm-hmm. But I feel that if he knew that the real message I was spreading was a good one and pro Bill Clinton, he would have
put the award down, right? And not okay.
So what did you hear that? This kid is saying, well, if he knew, and I'm trying to do his accent because he's going to explain here in a second that he is doing an accent. He is not. This is not his ordinary way of speaking. But he's saying if he knew that Bill Clinton, you know, that I was pro Bill Clinton message, then he would have felt different and wouldn't have been so upset. But this is just beyond parody at this point. There's got to be more to the story.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, I finished the speech. You can see that a lot of the people in the crowd were very happy. They were clapping.
They were clapping.
You can see a couple of security usher me out of the stadium.
Right. Well,
that's the host, Jeff Keighley. You know, he didn't seem too pleased about it. But I think a lot of people would have been maybe a little less angry if they had realized the full extent of what I said. A lot of people didn't pick it up because of my heavy accent. You know, I've actually, you know, there's clips of me from, you know, a year or two ago. I don't have this accent. A lot of people are wondering if it's fake. You know, I've been trying to vigorously develop this accent, you know, for the past couple hours now.
The past couple of hours now. He's been vigorously working on this accent for hours before he went on the stage, or maybe before he went on this interview that he went on. And I don't even know what, I want to find out what show that is. Ask a male American under the age, or Englishman under the age of 25, and they'll probably tell you instantly what show this was and know it back and forth. And I just sound like an old person trying to describe it, but I'm mediating between the elder members of the audience and the younger ones who probably wish I would move on to something else by now. But it was hilarious, and we are going to move on. So he's got the Reformed Orthodox Rabbi Bill Clinton has been summoned and will probably be featured in video games for years to come now, because that's how these things go. So moving back home and into kind of the world of politics, there will, for the first time ever, as reported by Insider Paper, on U.S. currency, you will see women on the face of currency. Two of them, in fact. This story from December the 9th starts off by telling us most people don't have to worry if their signature is sloppy, but if it's your name on the U.S. dollar bill, it's best to practice, says U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. And it goes on into saying some flattering things about her. But she also now says, you're talking about her name. Should have highlighted the piece of this story, but I'm still recovering from the video game awards. She says you'd think it would be a straightforward process to make changes, but it's kind of complicated. Talks about the signature changing process, but okay, here she goes. In addition to the first female Treasury Secretary's name appearing on them, the new notes unveiled Thursday will also be historic for including two women's signatures, that of Yellen's and U.S. Treasurer Lynn Malerba. So, oh, forgive me, it's not two women's faces, it's their signatures, but it is the first time that our money will be signed by women. So they're not actually, I thought they were adding new bills and they were going to put their names on it, but it's the $1 and $5 existing bills with the existing faces. So George Washington's still on the one, still safe for now. Sorry if I panicked anybody who was hearing that, and I can't edit it out because of the nature of how we do this program. That's why you got to stick around until January when we start to really up the production levels a notch. But yes, the first notes bearing Yellen and Malerba's signatures are coming into circulation in, I think it's next year, or maybe, I don't think it would be 2024. It doesn't say specifically when it's going to happen in here. But there you have it. Welcome aboard, women, to the world of money. I'm so glad that you're finally able to participate. It's about time. So let's talk about the First Lady while we're on the subject. And on a December 12th Fox News piece. It says Melania Trump is sharing the magic and message of hope and compassion at a foster care holiday celebration. And this was a heartwarming story. It is getting close to Christmas time, and I thought maybe we could talk about one of those. So the story says, former First Lady Melania Trump and President Trump shared Christmas cheer with the foster care families in Palm Beach, Florida, Sunday, inviting them to join some of the Trump family's favorite holiday traditions. I'm happy to share in the festivities with the foster care community at this very special time of year, Mrs. Trump told Fox News Digital. My dream is that when Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus talk to a child at our event, these wonderful words, together with the activities and the fun of the day, create beautiful, lifelong memories. As part of the First Lady's Be Best and Fostering the Future events, which raise public awareness for the children's well-being and youth communities, the Trumps welcomed nearly 100 foster kids to the Trump International Golf Course to decorate gingerbread cookies, hand-paint ornaments, get faces painted, meet Santa and Mrs. Claus, and listen to a story time reading with the author of the popular Christmas children's Christmas book series, Oliver the Ornament, Todd Zimmerman is the author of that. So this was an event for children of all ages, and the article uses the word tweens, which is very cringe, but there it is. It's foxnews.com article. But it's pretty cool that the Trumps do these events to their benefit events. I know that before Trump was president, he's done a lot of charity type work. Some of the apprentice seasons were done when the ones were with the celebrity apprentices. Those were all done for charity. They weren't for the benefit of the people on there. It probably didn't give them a lot of publicity, although it was kind of a popular show at the time on NBC. But, you know, Trump has done numerous things charitably as a rich person that I don't think he gets a lot of credit for, because he's usually the subject of, oh, I don't know, a political investigation or an FBI raid or an impeachment or a hoax of some type, or he said something, he's got his own self in trouble by saying something that is provocative, and maybe he just needed the attention and that's why he did it. Who knows what's going on there? But I wanted to let you know that they also did an event for foster children. The first couple, the former first couple, I don't know how you say that, but that's what they did. And good for them. I think that is terrific. And sounds like the initiative has something to do with like helping the foster care system too, which really desperately needs a lot of help. So something else that needs help, I don't know if that's a good segue. Something else that needs help is our energy demands. Have you noticed that your gas and electric bills have been rising for years and years, but particularly this year, if you live in my state? Now, nuclear energy is back in the news, and you may have heard that over the last couple of days that scientists at the National Ignition Lab have achieved a more viable form of nuclear fusion. So I looked into it a little bit. I wanted to have something intelligent sounding to talk about this week on the show before we really get into the week before Christmas next week. It's really coming up pretty quick. I don't know why I have to keep reminding myself, but maybe somebody like myself who needs to go finish Christmas, you know, shopping and preparations, maybe that's why I keep mentioning it. So nuclear fusion out of the Lawrence Livermore Lab, this National Ignition Lab, says that they have now produced a form of nuclear fusion in a reaction that produces more energy than it takes to go into it, thus making it viable and giving us a path to real renewable energy. Here's a little bit from Fox News bulletin this morning before the Department of Energy made a statement on it, and then we'll talk about this.
What scientists at the National Ignition Lab achieved, I'm told, is analogous to the gasoline engine. When a spark plug ignited a drop of gasoline to drive a piston to power a car, well, that was a breakthrough in harnessing the power of carbon. At Livermore, scientists produced energy not by splitting atoms, but combining them.
This is a key scientific achievement to prove that that fusion energy is possible. Now we have to take this and harness this to make useful electricity.
So fusion is often called the holy grail of energy. It's low risk, affordable, unlimited, carbon-free, and produces no radioactive waste.
Raw material is water. There's no radioactive waste to have to bury in a mountain someplace. And this will really help all of us get through climate change and through poverty.
So this video shows how it worked. A tiny hydrogen capsule, about the size of a pencil eraser, is hit with high-powered lasers. Atoms converge, generating the heat to produce electricity.
So it's touted as a breakthrough in a multi-billion dollar project to develop cheap, clean, and renewable energy, which would be the Holy Grail referenced in this clip. The Holy Grail of energy, of course, is one that doesn't require resources that are going to be depleted. It uses water, it uses, I guess, hydrogen, and they do fusion. Now, it's funny how this always gets reported in the news. You know, fusion has been possible. It's something that we've known about for over 100 years, and we're capable of producing it. It's just that the difference is it takes so much energy to get one reaction started that it doesn't produce that much energy on the output. And it still is a thermal output is how it works. Even nuclear fission plants, they generate heat. The heat heats the air moves, and it turns a turbine. And that's basically how nuclear fusion or fission works. Presumably, fusion would do the same thing. The reaction creates some kind of heat, and then that heat then turns a turbine. And so if you can get fusion, it helps in a number of ways. Instead of having radioactive waste, they've fused together elements. And I don't know, I thought I was going to talk about fission and try to sound all sciencey, but really without scripting that out, I would stumble through it too much. But the point of all of this, though, is that they've just achieved, according to these reports, the threshold of making it produce more energy than it create or than it costs to put into it. And they say there's no commercial application really for 10 years. Now, we got some clarity on this from the Department of Energy today, but there's also a laundry list of inaccuracies in the report you just heard. And I listed a couple of those, which were low risk, affordable, unlimited, carbon-free. And I don't think it has radioactive waste, but I guarantee you it takes carbon to get these reactions going. How do they power the reactions in the first place? It's something to do with lasers, and that power has to come from somewhere. They used carbon in the process of putting this together, which would also not make it affordable considering it's a multi-billion dollar project. And low risk, really? This is low risk. I mean, maybe it is lower risk than fission, but I'm sure there are risks involved that have not been explained on our news channels to us. So anyways, I just had to cut through some of the media speak there. And now listen to the Department of Energy is talking about kind of the future plans for this, which is interesting. And evidently the Biden administration is all on board with this, even though politicians are ordinarily very quiet about anything to do with nuclear, and then especially fusion, because remember, fusion is not something. We don't have fusion plants. We have stories every few years of somebody inventing a fusion operating fusion cell of some type, but they never seem to go anywhere. Well, this, I don't know. This is the first time I think the Department of Energy has really chimed in on it. So listen to the spokesperson now.
And that's why the Biden-Harris administration is aiming to capitalize on this moment. Today's announcement is a huge step forward to the president's goal of achieving commercial fusion within a decade. But there's still a lot more to do, so much more. We'll continue to work toward that goal and find other ways to progress to reach fusion energy. So, for example, in September, the Department of Energy made a $50 million investment for public-private partnerships to start working toward fusion pilot plant designs. And we're partnering with the Office of Science and Technology Policy to map out the president's bold vision for driving that commercial fusion in the next decade with the highest safety standards, with cost-effective, equitable deployment that positions American businesses to lead and communities to thrive, and with a skilled workforce that's diverse and inclusive. This is what it looks like for America to lead. And we're just getting started.
Wow, super confident there at the end. We're just getting started. All right, well, we're just getting started on this show, and I am excited about 2023. for a difference in level of excitement comparison for you there. But there's a $50 million public-private partnership investment for pilot plant designs. Wow, that's a mouthful. And that's going to go towards this 10-year plan, which apparently the Biden administration has and is behind, to get us to having nuclear fusion in our communities in 10 years, or maybe at least start to see those in 10 years. I don't know how much the Biden administration really has to do with it and how much they are just getting credit for it since they're the ones in office at this moment. I think it's really our nuclear engineers and scientists that deserve all the praise for this one, if it does indeed pan out. I think there's a lot of hype and a lot of fanfare around it, but because of how widespread the reporting is, it makes you think that there is something that's a little bit different this time. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, don't expect the inflation figures to be going down because of this anytime soon. It would take years and years to start getting returns on those investments and seeing, you know, I don't know if we'll ever see cheaper energy costs. They may make energy cheaper with this. Let's say they do. Well, inflation will make it so that you're still paying the same amount anyways, even if it's cheaper. So there you go. That's pretty much all I have to say about fusion. One final story in the political sphere in American politics in the scene. There are two hearings going on in the state of Arizona. One of them has to do with Carrie Lake versus Hobbs. And that hearing was today. There is another one set for the 16th for Mark Fincham, who ran for Secretary of State. And in Arizona, the Secretary of State basically has oversight over how the elections are run. Both Lake and Fincham have been vocal champions of the election integrity cause, and particularly in Arizona, where they discovered, if you looked into the details of the audit they conducted, a lot of flaws, at the very least, if not outright reasons to deny that the election was fairly conducted. And I think there's more than enough reason to say that. But even beyond that, if you look into the details of that audit, I mean, there's all kinds of things in there that look like duplicated signatures, meaning the same signature on more than one affidavit for a ballot. I mean, that's pretty significant. That means that really, if the people had their way, if the people who know what was going on had their way, at least know what we think was going on, there would be a do-over election at the very least. And if not, you know, more investigations and all kinds of things, because you got to find out why is this happening. It's not just happening on accident. It's not just happening because of incompetence. I think there's a lot behind it, but we don't get those answers for the time being because of how the elections turned out this year in the midterms. And so Carrie Lake is suing because she wants to expose many of the same problems that were reported on election day and around the election. And the hearing today was on whether or not to dismiss the suit that Lake is bringing. And I think it's the same thing for Fincham, that I don't know who's suing, countersuing him, but Hobbs, Team Hobbs, the incoming gubernatorial team, is suing the Lake campaign to have this, they've made a motion of some kind to have this other suit dismissed, if that makes sense. And so that's still going on. I don't know what's going to happen. I have the most hope of any of the cases in what Carrie Lake is doing, because I think if anybody has been able to put together the resources it would take to litigate this in a way that would be successful, I think she's the center of that target. I think that's probably, in this cycle at least, our best chance of getting any real answers on these elections. But that said, I mean, I'm going to give it maybe kind of a 40-60 chance of happening. And we'll see with Mark Fincham too. These cases could both be dismissed. I don't know what the outcome was today, and it'll be next week before we'll be able to talk about both of them in their entirety anyways. But beyond that, if they don't get dismissed now, they could still go to a hearing and be denied later. So the odds are really not in favor of this being the one-two punch that knocks down the election integrity giant. So I wouldn't get my hopes too heavy in this one, but I am going to watch it and see what happens. We may learn some new things from it, Or if not, I think that Carrie Lake is not done in this fight. I think that she and others are going to form some kind of coalition to see some changes in this going forward. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. There's work that needs to be done state by state. I would say primarily in the big swing states where the biggest problems have been exposed or at least been made apparent to those of us who are watching. I think that's really where the biggest impact will be seen, because that's where we need it the most. But it's really everywhere too. It's something that we have to watch out for in every single one of our states. So I'll have more to say on that in the year ahead, as well as many other topics. I think it is a multi-pronged approach to restoring integrity in our government. It's got to be at every level, because we can't just say, aha, look here, if we fix this, everything's fine. No, we've got issues at just about every level of office that is in this country, in every state, and in most counties. So I think it's going to take a local awakening process and for us to relearn how this works. Otherwise, we're going to be stuck with like this mediocre, doesn't really listen to the people, but just tries to keep us from rioting in the streets kind of government. That's not really what America is supposed to be all about. So I think that there are brighter days ahead. I think it's going to be a long fight, but I think some of us are starting to be awake to these challenges and not look at them in the classical left-right partisan lens. Yes, there is a left and a right. There's a liberal way and there's a conservative way, but we used to have liberal and conservative that were all pro-America and were all pro keeping basically traditional values and not just throwing it all off like a Marxist color revolution. So I think the future is bright for America, even though it may feel tough when inflation is crazy. But keep in mind, you know, inflation is worse in some other places too. So it could be worse here. We still have it pretty good here in America. It's where I would want to be if I was anywhere else in the world. Now, let us talk about a couple of topics and then we're basically done for today. And I've got to get out of here and do some more work and earn some more Christmas money anyhow, as soon as we're done here. So I'm going to be off to the races after this. But I caught the opener to The Chosen, this Christian series that's put on by Dallas Jenkins, who is the son of one of the writers of the Left Behind series. Now, I have some theological problems with the Left Behind series, but they are well-written and very well-known Christian books that have been around for a couple of decades now. Well, the son of that author is also a creative and is a producer. He had some failures in Hollywood, or I don't know if it was even Hollywood, but in the mainstream movie producing industry. But he had apparently gained a lot of skills in the process, and he had an idea and a passion for creating a multi-season show that was about the life and times of the disciples of Jesus and about Jesus. So he calls it a Jesus show all the time. But I always felt like it's more telling the stories of the disciples than it is even Jesus. It's like Jesus is there, and he's actually the main character, and you see a lot of things through his perspective, but you also see it through the eyes of these just ordinary fishermen, a tax collector, people from different walks of life. They even bring in Judas, which you'll hear about here in just a second. And you see how these people who lived in the Roman system, they had just been conquered like within a generation. They've been taken over by Rome. And there's a lot of bad things going on unless you're a Roman. And they were Jews. They were definitely one of the oppressed populations unless you were the well-connected. It's kind of how it always goes. So it's getting to see it from their perspective. I just love that. Like just all the possibilities that opens creatively, I enjoy, but even just getting to connect with those stories, and they do a great job of it. So I do have a reaction though to the first episode of the new season. And I'm going to give that to you after we play a little bit of their trailer for the season opener. So here's an intro to The Chosen. It's from a video, but I think the audio carries it through pretty well. Let's listen to about a minute of this.
You look troubled.
I am.
You're losing something. I know what that's like.
What are you losing?
Time.
I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you.
Someone touched me.
If you are really the one who is to come, should we look for someone else?
Go and tell John what you hear and see.
Who is it? Where did we stop?
It's him. I'm Judas of Kerioth.
I have chosen you 12 as my apostles.
Don't feel any different?
I don't need you to feel anything to do great things. But a stirring in your hearts. In the middle of such division and unrest. Is Father God being revealed to you?
Okay, I think that's a good place to cut it. It's like a 3-minute long video, and that's about the middle of it. So, sounds pretty good. I mean, I loved some of what you're hearing right there is from that episode 1, which I just watched. So it's a great way to get into that. You're hearing what they've really led up to for the first 2 full seasons, kind of short seasons. I think they're 8 episodes each, but it's a crowdfunded show, and they've built for 2 seasons up to the Sermon on the Mount, which is probably the most famous thing that Jesus did before, you know, other than his crucifixion is pretty well known and his birth. But I mean, like during his life and ministry, Sermon on the Mount, a lot of the famous quotes that we know about from Jesus come from that. It's written about, and I think it's written about in all of the Gospels. And so the show delivers really well in building the anticipation towards this event. It's been, I guess, 3 years I've been waiting to see it myself, from the very beginning of those, you know, just shoestring budget episodes that they made look like they were full on TV level productions. I mean, like, you know, Game of Thrones is on TV. Remember that? It's got movie level production, but that's kind of what the standard is now. So anyways, they've got that going, and yeah, the episode starts off terrific. It has the feel of a show that's matured from seasons 1 to 2. Definitely season 2 felt bigger than season 1 and makes you, you know, feel like, oh, this is something that can compete with anything that's on Netflix. And I think it could. I mean, I think there's a lot of garbage on Netflix, frankly, but there's some good stuff on there too, but a lot of it's garbage. And this show needs to be able to compete with that in order for it to do what they're aiming for it to do. And I think it has done that pretty well. But from really the end of the Sermon on the Mount and this little scene they do afterwards on, I started to get a little bit let down. So I'm hoping that the episode 2 will pick me back up. But some of the storylines they try to get into and some of the romances, I don't feel like they pulled it off in a way that avoided kind of just being cheeky or a little bit, you know, goofy. And it was trying to be, it's a more serious show than that. And that, I don't know. I have high hopes that this will continue to be something that's not only like doctrinally accurate as far as the doctrines that they address in the show. They're not going to come out with anything and make me think, oh, well, you know, great. They're doing great up until they said that, you know, this weird thing over here, whatever that might be. And I don't think they're going to do that because they're trying to make the show appeal to people of all the different denominations that are out there. And that's understandable in this type of production. But if they could avoid having it feel like it's kind of like Christian echo chambers. It's anytime you're in an echo chamber, and we are all guilty of this in some area of our lives or another, or many in some cases, you don't realize when you're saying something that's an inside thing to your echo chamber, because you think everybody knows it. You think everybody gets that, and they don't. And so, you know, you can't just like, I don't know, some, you know, a conservative walks into a room full of a mixed audience and uses the word libtard in a joke, not realizing that half the people in the room are liberals and will get offended by that, you know, that kind of thing. And so there's nothing offensive in this, but just, I don't know, I felt like the way that the interactions were going after that big moment didn't seem to live up to that moment. And that's probably a difficult thing to do. Maybe I'm being overcritical of it, but I just wanted to share my thoughts on it. I am still looking forward to the rest of the season. I'm pretty excited for where they're going with it. Obviously, being a multi-season show about Jesus, it's going to end at some point in a crucifixion. Okay, so because that's just an absolute fact. But I think that they don't even want to end it there. I think they want to go on another season into the early Acts of the Apostles recorded in the Book of Acts. So I think that's pretty cool. We'll talk about it in time to come. And when I have video on and I'm using one of those streaming programs, I will be able to play the actual video. It'll be a little bit easier to react than trying to be like, what should I describe that was in that video that nobody can see because this is audio. So anyways, that'll be fun. And then I just had a couple of other stories that we're not going to get to for sake of time. One is on a fascinating esoteric kind of article I read that's called The Seven Sages, or about these myths of the seven sages from different cultures throughout history, and about these ancient imparters of wisdom that many old cultures on this planet believed gave us the knowledge of civilization. Thought that was pretty cool to go into, and we could talk about some of the differences of that maybe on a future video. And then also the Space Force. You heard of them? Well, somebody had an interesting question this week that I wanted to respond to, but won't until probably next week. We can do this one. What is it that they're actually protecting us from? I mean, it's a military force. It's called the Space Force. I mean, we know what the Air Force protects us from, right? Threats from air, land, and sea abroad, and threats to the homeland if we were to have such an attack. And we may have a mission that they get sent on to go rescue, or, you know, that's what the Air Force does. What does the Space Force do? What are they protecting us from? I've got a lot of thoughts, and I'm sure you do too if you're into that, but we'll get into Space Force next week and some other fascinating topics in weeks and weeks to come. I've also got another idea for a new video, kind of like my Thanksgiving video. This will be sort of a tandem or follow-up to it. I'll be working on that. Not before Christmas, definitely not. It's going to take some time to put together. But it's about another voyage on a sailing vessel that made it to America, but in a different century than the Pilgrims. So we'll talk about that coming up. And in the meantime, be sure you follow the show on YouTube, Rumble. It's called Liberty Sound. And I would appreciate any subs on there, as well as it's still on Podbean. It may still be there when we're done, but last week will probably be the last live broadcast on Podbean before we move it over to the other ones coming up after Christmas in the new year. So I will see you on the other side.